Let's go back now into our American history books on this election day. You think political attack ads today are mean-spirited? Well, if you were watching TV in, well, let's say 1800, here's a sample of what you might have heard.
John Adams is a blind, bald, crippled, toothless man who wants to start a war with France. While he's not busy importing mistresses from Europe, he's trying to marry one of his sons to a daughter of King George. If Thomas Jefferson wins, murder, robbery, rape, adultery, and incest will be openly taught and practiced.
Let's go back in time and relive some of the meanest political campaigns and slogans and ads in American history as we say hello to Gleaves Whitney, who directs the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. He's also authored or edited 15 books looking at our presidents and the governors of Michigan. Gleaves, it seems very clear from that those clips we played, based on actual writings and speeches, attack ads have clearly been a part of our history right from the first presidential race.
Well, that's right, Cindy, and thanks for having me on your program. And it's so true, and I'm always amused when people say, oh, you know, our civil society is breaking down and just sort of common courtesies in these campaigns are breaking down. It's true. We have a lot of misleading and even, I think, mendacious statements in our ads. There's no question that we have a political culture which is put up with lying. But in terms of the actual comportment of the candidates, they don't fight the way they used to. I mean, remember, in the early days of the Republic, Cindy, down on the floor of the House of Representatives, when people would start to promote one candidate over the other, they would sometimes pick up the fire tongs and physically attack each other on the floor. So fighting is part of our very political DNA. You were very right, I think, to start with that clip from the election of 1800. Vicious election. I'm glad you had the clip about Adams importing mistresses and technically from France and Germany, because that became sort of this campaign strategy to actually look at the very moral Adams as a debauched man.
Well, did Thomas Jefferson really call John Adams a hermaphrodite?
Well, what he did is he had Callender, who was his paid publicist, do it in the Richmond Examiner. Callender did all the dirty work. But, you know, Jefferson was mean-spirited on a number of occasions, and it's hard for us to summon this side of Jefferson, the author of the Declaration of Independence, for Pete's sake. I mean, what's going on here?
Right.
But he so angered George Washington in the way he treated both Washington and Adams that George and Martha never spoke to him again.
Wow.
I mean, these are our founding fathers who were at loggerheads and then almost came to fisticuffs again and again. So it's very early on in this election of 1800. They were hurling horrible, scurrilous things at each other. And the funny part of it is Jefferson needed Pennsylvania's electoral votes.
Okay.
And so they not only cooked up the rumor that Adams had had mistresses shipped in from Germany and France, they further refined the rumor by saying, well, Adams sent the German mistresses back to Germany in order to offend the electors of Pennsylvania so they would vote for Jefferson.
Gotcha.
Because you got the Pennsylvania Dutch there, the Germans.
Yes. So total dirty tricks.
Total dirty tricks. Layer upon layer of dirty tricks.
Now, the Stephen Douglas Abraham Lincoln contest got kind of nasty. I found that one quote, Mr. Douglas labeling Mr. Lincoln as a hatchet-faced nutmeg dealer. Well, first of all, what did they have against nutmeg dealers?
I know. And, you know, the famous quotation of all time coming out of Lincoln and Douglas is that, you know, Douglas accused Lincoln of having two faces, and Lincoln knew he was ugly, and he said, my dear friend, Mr. Douglas, if I really had two faces, would I have come out with this one?
Oh. Now, I remember from my history studies the famous slam in 1884 against Democrat Grover Cleveland, who'd been accused of siring an out-of-wedlock child. And that slogan was?
Gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha.
Mama, where's my pa?
And right.
Who got the last laugh with that one?
I know. Well, that was another one. It shows that sex scandals always sell in national politics. Bill Clinton certainly learned it. John F. Kennedy was spared it. There was a point, in fact, in the 1960 campaign where Richard Nixon was urged to talk about John F. Kennedy's indiscretions, and Nixon said, no, I will not do it. He was a fine colleague of mine, and I will not take the race to that low level.
Really?
There have been, and this from Nixon, you know, who we usually don't think of as a civil politician, but somebody who practices character assassination. I mean, you remember the senator he ran against, Nancy Hagan Douglas, he said she was pink down to her undies, you know. I mean, there have been some scurrilous things said, you know, in these candidates, but also opportunities for nobility and restraint, and we also need to celebrate that as well.
Indeed.
When we can.
You know, I just wonder, talk about attack ads and campaigns. Is it a safe bet to say, Gleaves, that voters hate negativity except when they like it?
I like it. I think all of them are like my Aunt Bitsy, who says, if you have something bad to say about somebody, come sit by me.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, that's traced back to Alice Roosevelt Longworth. I think Americans are a little bit two-faced in this. Yes, we say we want civility, but boy, we love the good fight, don't we? We actually are entertained by it to some extent, and it makes the cocktail rounds more interesting.
It does indeed.
I remember even, say, in our lifetimes, for most of us today, if we go even back to, say, the 1980 election with Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, we see, you know, that Reagan was very viciously mocked by the media. And in fact, it was common in some broadcasts to call him Ray Gun, RAY-GUN.
I remember that.
Yes, with the insinuation that this guy was reckless, mm-hmm. he had a quick nuclear trigger finger, and that we would all be in the Armageddon if he were elected. And so, you know, there have been some pretty low blows there, but of course, then you go to the Willie Horton ads in 1988, you know, against Dukakis when Bush was running, and you take the lowest common denominator, the worst mistake that a politician has made, and then you drill down into that. You keep airing those commercials until they become a mantra. So, you know, both sides, both political parties are equally susceptible to this kind of thing. It makes for quite a sport.
You can watch that satire video of the 1800 campaign on our website. You can go to the stateside link at michiganradio.org. We think you will get an Election Day chuckle out of it. Gleaves, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you, Cindy.
Gleaves Whitney is a scholar, author, and the director of the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. Coming up next, a conversation with singer Betty Levette. That's here on Stateside.